I'm sitting with Madeline Leenbruggen, who is the current SciShow resident.
This has been, like, the best week of my life.
It's been so much fun. It's such a fun group of people, and I have a great time doing it, too.
Everyone who works at SciShow, and all of Complexly, but especially SciShow,
they're
so great.
They're great.
Really, really great people.
I'm glad you think so. And when I have people who do science communication come to town, I like to invite them over, and then I'm going to tell you what is currently my favorite fact. We can talk about why it's my favorite fact. There's something that makes, like, facts good and interesting, and I know that you're actually quite good at this, but our job is to, like, find the frame through which you can make something interesting.
Right.
I think that that's, like, a weird act of, like, mystical empathy, where you're, like, trying to understand the mind of millions of people and, like, investigating what's happening inside of you when you get curious about something.
Mm.
I'm going to tell you my favorite fact right now.
Okay, I'm ready.
Which is that Brazilian butt lifts, it turns out, may help us treat cancer.
I'm gonna need a lot more.
Do you know what a BBL is?
I do know what a BBL is.
Okay, so this is where you take fat from one part of your body, you move it to a different part of your body that is a more desirable place for fat to be.
Yes.
Here's a weird thing that you didn't know, probably. So one of the things about cancer is that it loves glucose. So it does a different kind of metabolism that's very glucose hungry. It results in less energy for the cell per unit of glucose, but it doesn't use as much oxygen. And this is helpful for many cancers, not all, but many cancers, because they become these, like, solid tumors and the oxygen isn't good at permeating into them. And so they have to switch to this other kind of metabolism in order to survive. And we noticed this about cancer very early on in the study of cancer, that a lot of cancers used different metabolism. They created really acidic environments around themselves. They used way more glucose and they actually got less energy out of that glucose.
Okay.
There's another part of the body that is like this, and it is definitely not fat. So fat is very metabolically nothing. You know, it's just like sits there waiting around in case you need it. But there's a different kind of fat called brown fat that's like more vascularized, smaller cells, and it burns really quickly. And we have it in part, it seems, specifically for temperature regulation. So if you get super cold, before you start shivering, you start burning brown fat. And brown fat is very glucose hungry. And what they have done in mice, but not in people, is proved that if you transplant brown fat from where it is to directly adjacent to cancer cells, it will outcompete the cancer cells for the glucose.
Interesting.
And will actually lead to the mice's tumors not growing as much and the mice living longer.
So my next question is, were they giving the mice BBLs?
Well, so like one of the things about BBLs is we now have a bunch of experience moving fat around the body and knowing exactly what the impacts of that are.
Okay.
So we don't have to do a bunch of research on, like, how do you transplant fat? And is it safe to transplant fat? Okay. And, like, what procedures do you need to do to transplant fat safely? Because we've been doing that for a long time now.
Right.
As a cosmetic surgery procedure.
So the helpful part of the BBLs is that knowledge. It
turns out that it's a huge deal in medicine if you get to use a procedure you've already developed. Because the amount work that goes into making sure that that new procedure is safe can be, like, a decade-long process. So if you can use a procedure that already exists, then you don't have to do all of that work to get the authorizations to do it.
The pieces are coming together for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, are you joking me? So yeah, tell me why you think this is a good fact.
I think it's a good fact because the connotation of Brazilian butt lifts is that it's, like, you know, it's a very image focused thing. Mm-hmm. It's something that people do purely for cosmetic reasons.
Right. But it's bit of a recreational medicine.
Yes.
You know, not necessary.
Yes. Yeah. But then it's got this connection to something that is absolutely critical and, like, a really big problem, I would say, that we are interested in solving. The biology of it, too, is genuinely interesting.
Genuinely interesting, but maybe you wouldn't necessarily, or not you, but one might not be like, yes, I would like to know all about how brown fat impacts cancer.
Right. If you had told me that just brown fat can outcompete cancer, I'd be like,
that's cool.
Okay.
I hope that they figure that out.
That sounds nice. But yeah, the additional, like, the story layer of it, like, connecting it to something that I do have, like, I don't know what brown fat is, but I have heard of a BBL, so the connection back to things that I am familiar with is a huge part of what makes it a good fact, I think.
Yeah, something you're familiar with, something that's, like, in the zeitgeist, you know. Another thing I like about it is the question that you asked, like, why is it important that we did BBLs?
Yeah.
Which shines light on a different part of medicine,
right.
And, like, all of the regulatory stuff that makes things take a long time. That's something that's really hard to talk about in ways that people will be interested in.
Yeah, and science is, is rightfully complicated when it comes to people. Yeah.
When you start doing kind of medicine, animal. You gotta make sure that you're not gonna do more harm than good.
Right.
And that's a lot of work. Turns out, moving fat around, not a big deal. As long as it's the same person. Like, if you put your fat in me, that would be bad.
That doesn't seem very safe.
I think that one of the reasons why our immune systems are so good at rejecting tissues from other people is maybe specifically to prevent cancer from being contagious. Oh. That's like a really bad thing when it happens. It happens very rarely, but it happens. Like if one's body didn't reject the cells of another person's body, it would be way easier for a cancer to jump from one person to another, and that could have really devastating, like, sort of whole population consequences.
That's a terrifying prospect.
Yeah, it's really bad.
If cancer were contagious. Yeah. Yeah, that would be not good.
No, it happens every once in a while, but in
is
really
it a
specific circumstances.
Kind of cancer that is able to do this, or have multiple kinds demonstrated contagion?
Multiple kinds of demonstrated contagion. There's one situation where a doctor like did an accidental stick, like got stuck by a needle and grew a little cancer on his hand that was like his patient's lung cancer or something.
Oh my
gosh. But it was really contained by his immune system, and so he just cut it off. He didn't. Somebody cut it off and he was fine. The more common scenario is when people are, when they get organ transplants, they're on these immune suppressors, and that prevents you from rejecting the organ, but it also prevents you from rejecting, if there is like a tiny invisible cancer in that organ, it prevents you from, so like, that's not really a contagious cancer, but it is one person's cancer inside another person. You like literally put the cancer inside along with the organ though.
Yikes.
So you don't want that.
Cancer is really good at doing its job.
It is.
Which is unfortunately hurting the host.
People. Yes.
But
it's evolving to exist in its environment.
Yeah.
And to survive and thrive.
Right.
Until it stops. But there's also famously a dog contagious tumor that is still circulating in dogs today. It is actually evolved to thrive by no longer being very deadly. So it just sort of like lives on the dogs.
Like the epidemic stage of any type of viral.
Yeah.
Okay. So it just,
it's
dogs
like
just
in
have
the population
it.
Now. It's, I mean, they do in many places. See, we've, I think, mostly eradicated it in the U.S. It's sexually transmitted, so it's easier to do if you're, if the dogs are more well watched after.
Right.
More of a disease of dogs left to their own devices. But they think that it probably, that cancer would not have evolved naturally. It evolved in a situation where the dogs were really inbred because of breeding.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the dogs had very similar immune systems and they couldn't tell the
difference. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So you study physics mostly.
I do.
Hit you with some biology facts there.
Yeah, I don't know hardly anything about cancer or anatomy or things that are alive.
I know so much.
How'd you learn so much about cancer, Hank?
I mean, you don't have, it's not like a requirement. It's not necessarily comforting. I think that it made me feel some amount of control.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it wasn't over my outcome, like just understanding that I'm like a biological system that's doing its biological system things.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's not control. That's more like acceptance.
Yeah.
That's good. Acceptance is good. That has a positive connotation. So it must be good.
I think in that case it is.
Yeah.
Not to make your cancer about me, but I would say that that's kind of a similar reason I chose to study physics. This is a weird place to live in. It's a weird world.
It is.
And one of the things that helped me feel more part of it was understanding things a lot more and understanding how the world got to be the way that it is.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I love studying the fundamentals of things.
This is the fun physics question. It should all, like, given initial starting conditions, all be kind of like just stuff bouncing around. Do you think that it's actually that way? That like, is there an amount of, like, preordainedness to the universe?
This is a really big philosophical split, I think, for the field.
Interesting. I love that physics and philosophy have never gotten rid of each other.
Never, ever. The most mind-bending experiences that I've ever had have all been in physics classrooms.
Oh, nice.
Trying to, you know, having my perception of reality completely rewritten on, like, a Tuesday at 9:30 a.m. It's not the split that you think it is. It's not a split of people who say, yes, the universe is preordained, and no, it isn't. It's more of a split of people who think about it and people who are like, I don't want to think about it. But I think that of the camp that do think about it and do engage in it, I think they would say that, like, you know, if we could write infinitely detailed descriptions of things, mm-hmm. then yes, you would find one master equation that completely can describe everything that has happened.
But maybe everything that has happened includes more than just this one universe, though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, in theory, there would be a way to quantify all of these aspects, but that's so far beyond what is at all attainable. So people think about it in terms of statistical events and mm-hmm. likelihoods. One of the beauties of it is stochasticity and randomness.
Sure.
That you can't just define everything. There are so many elements that you can't account for, and we call that randomness.
So there isn't randomness. There just might as well be?
I would say yes. Maybe wow. some people would argue with me on that, but yeah. I would say if we had perfect information about the universe, there would be no randomness. But we can't have perfect
sure.
information.
The but philosophically, you could imagine the perfect information.
Yes. And so the compromise for us is that there's stuff that we don't know is going to happen, and we have to build that into our calculations.
Yeah. Okay, I'm working on a video right now. And this is the title, and I'm wondering if you can tell me the topic of the video by the title.
Okay.
There's more than one multiverse.
My first thought is that there's, like, the multiverse that, you know, there's the multiverse we imagine, there's the multiverse in our media, and then there's, like, the multiverse as the, like, way that we treat it in physics.
The thing I actually want to talk about is that there are, that physics has more than one multiverse. So okay. there's, like, the many worlds interpretation,
yeah. Yeah.
and then there's, like, string theory bubble shit that I do not understand.
Me either.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone does. None of them are the multiverse that is in the media. Like, there's the world where, like, my tire popped today on the way to work,
right.
and there's, that's right. not the multiverse. But there's, like, every quantum state, it, like, creates a,
yes.
like, flips one way or the other, and that creates another universe,
right.
many worlds thing. There are other multiverses that physicists talk about, and they are different multiverses.
Yes.
And that's, like, are you joking to me? Are you joking? You're saying that there's, like, multiple multiverses, but, like, not related to each other.
Well, the thing about physicists is that they love to give the same name to completely different things.
Oh, boy, I have noticed that.
It's really annoying.
Don't try to ask a physicist about dark matter. I've had people say to me that dark matter is not a thing. It is a problem.
Yeah, sure. That's one way to say it. Like, we call it the dark matter problem, and there are many ways that we could solve that problem.
And many of them are dark matter, but some of them aren't.
Many of them are a type of matter that is completely different than
yeah.
what we are made of.
There's a bunch of different candidates.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's dozens of things that we yeah. are still pursuing and trying to track down.
What's your favorite?
My favorite is the axion.
Heard of it. I couldn't tell you what it is.
It is a particle.
Okay.
It's a spin zero boson.
Me too.
You are far more complicated okay, than
I've,
a spin
I've,
zero boson.
I have many spins.
This particle got its name. It's actually named after a detergent. Like a cleaning detergent.
I knew it. I knew you'd just bust out with your actual favorite fact if we talked about it long enough. Is your okay, favorite so fact that axions are named after a detergent?
This is one of my favorite facts. The axion is now one of the leading candidates for dark matter, and it is named after a detergent because it was proposed...
I don't know which detergent this is.
It was a detergent in the 70s
okay.
called Axion.
Oh, great.
Which sounds like a particle,
It does
right?
sound like a particle.
So
100%.
The axion was actually introduced as a theoretical solution to a completely different problem. This was a problem in quantum chromodynamics. All you need to know about that is that it is the study of the strong force.
Okay, which is the one that holds the nucleus together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the QCD theory, there was a problem, and it could be fixed if you added a particle that had a certain set of properties.
Where would that particle be? Just, like, existing?
Well, so the thing about it is that this particle wouldn't be able to be detected by most other matter. It would be really difficult to detect. It wouldn't interact very often.
Okay.
It would have mass.
So it would be, all right. That sounds familiar.
Yeah. The exact set of properties that were needed to fix this problem in QCD
mm-hmm.
turned out to have all of the exact properties that you would want from a dark matter candidate.
Gotcha.
So then people started studying it as a dark matter candidate, too. I forgot the whole detergent aspect of it. So
there was a reason. It wasn't just like, that's a good name.
The people who were working on this said, oh, we should call this the axion because it cleans up the theory.
Oh.
Isn't that good?
Could have been tied, though. Those people...
Could have been tied.
Maybe axions exist and there just are a ton of them around in the universe?
So maybe axions exist. If they do exist, then they're floating around. There are very, very specific instances in which an axion could be converted into a photon.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways that we are looking for these is we have these like big, really strong magnets and a completely empty chamber. And we are looking to see if any photons appear in the chamber.
Why are the magnets need to be there?
The magnets are part of what would convert the axion into a photon. So
this is like a big MRI running somewhere.
Yeah, kind of. Just, yeah. University just of like Washington.
Photon detectors.
Yep.
And like hoping.
Exactly.
That an axion. Just... And it happens like one out of every 1 × 10⁻⁹.
Something like that.
Something.
If they had found one, you would have heard about it.
Yeah.
People are getting really excited about them.
Okay. So axions is like on the up. It's like increasing in excitement. Or has it been a leading candidate for a while? I feel like I don't hear much about axions.
No, I mean, I think 8 years ago, they were still kind of like, there was still a lot of hope in WIMPs, which have been the leading candidate.
Gotcha.
Those are what we've been looking for at, like, the Large Hadron
Collider. Weakly interacting
massive
particles.
Yes.
Because they have mass. They're not massive.
Yes.
They have mass.
They have mass.
This is another problem. Words mean different things.
Yeah, that too. Physicists are not very good at naming things.
Oh,
I think we need...
Do not. Biology's way worse. Way worse. So much worse. It's just
like
a bunch of guys' names.
Oh, well, that's
I guess you
true.
Got a bunch of guys' names,
We've
too.
We've got a lot of
but
guys' names.
There's, yeah. Biology. Ugh. One of the things I do like about names in biology is that you can kind of tell when an organ was discovered by its name.
So there's like a little bit of history
You hear like lung and you're like, oh, that's an old one. That's been around for a while. Liver, we've known about that one the whole time. What was your favorite SciShow you wrote for your residency?
Ooh, my favorite one? That's like asking me to pick a favorite
baby.
Child. Yeah, I really liked the very first one that I pitched and wrote because I came into the residency with like a big list of ideas.
Yes.
And then went through every single one and was like, is this good? The very first one that I pitched and wrote was about porcelain china.
Oh, yeah.
And I am really interested in material science and the ways that the things we use have changed our world.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was such an interesting way to explore that theme. Plastic is everywhere now. And so I don't use porcelain in my life.
No.
I just know it as the special stuff that my grandma pulls out on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So to think about how some of these materials were developed and then consequently changed our world was really fun for me. And that one has a really interesting story in it, too.
Yeah.
There's this French priest.
I watched you record this. It didn't sound like he was doing anything illicit, honestly. It didn't seem like the people of China were like, don't steal our secrets.
Well, consider that he was an authority figure.
Oh.
He asked the people he had converted to tell him these secrets.
Okay. You know what Jesus would want you to do? Jesus would want you to tell me about the recipe for porcelain.
Exactly. Like, man, you might not go to heaven if you don't tell me how you like what the secret formula is.
Such a powerful story, that Jesus.
His name holds a lot of weight, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing a video right now about why Jesus has long hair. I cannot figure it out, so I'm phoning a friend on that one. I don't know if you've seen Dan McLellan. He's like a religious studies TikToker.
Oh, maybe.
I was like, Dan, this seems surprisingly complex.
And you know, I'd never thought about before how people of that era probably kept their hair. Like,
yes. No, we definitely know what the hair was like back then. And men did not have long hair. Very rarely would a man have long hair. And like it was seen as, in the same way that it was in like the 1950s in America, it was seen as very sort of like...
Slovenly?
Yeah, slovenly and like, I mean, taboo, basically. Mm. Like the Bible actually talks a little bit about people, like men with long hair, and how it's disgraceful.
Ah,
I think is the word that's used in the King James Bible.
And yet all of our depictions of him are...
Yeah.
White Jesus, long hair.
White Jesus, long
blue
hair.
Blue eyes.
Often with blue eyes, which is an exceptionally strange choice given the situation. At least he's not usually blonde. But it's interesting, like, the vibe that is carried with the long hair has changed a lot over the years. Like, his hair has been long for a long time in art, but the vibe that comes along with it is very different now. Like, it used to be, like, long hair, I think. Long hair like a god. Like, Zeus would have long flowing hair and a beard. And so Jesus had long flowing hair and a beard. So he looked like godly. But now he looks like, you see pictures of Jesus and he looks like cool, chill 70s friend Jesus.
Yeah.
And that, like, is a totally different vibe, but it, you know, he sort of, like, kept the long hair for a more approachable rebrand.
Can't wait for that video to come out.
I am always working on a lot of videos. To end off, let me tell you one of the facts that I didn't tell you.
Oh, please.
Triple Divide Peak is in Montana, and it is a place where if you drop a drop of water on the very top, it goes to three different oceans. Gulf.
Oh, that's a good fact.
And that's a very weird and unique spot. And then sperm whales eat more seafood than humans.
Well, they're bigger. Oh, are we talking about the global sperm whale population eats more seafood than the global human population? I'm more impressed by
that. That's
they're big guys. Like,
how much salmon do you eat, Hank?
They need more calories.
They only have one kind of food. There are a lot. They are a relatively successful. You know, obviously they were hunted, and it significantly impacted their population. But I don't think that they were ever, like, on the edge. But yeah, they're
good for them.
Eaters. For clarity, we're not that far below them. We could easily exceed.
Sure.
We could get there.
Right.
Which is weird for an animal that has other options.
There are a lot of movements to increase our protein. Seafood. Yeah, because to move away from cows, mostly. Yeah.
Land fish.
Yes. But the land fish. I didn't like that one. I didn't like that. The problem with this parallel is that if tuna are the chicken of the sea, like, tuna are big.
Yeah. Well, they're not all. So, like, if you buy a can of tuna, that's not a big tuna.
Oh, those are smaller tuna. Okay. That's still bigger than a chicken.
Yeah. Yeah. I would rather be in a room with a chicken. Even if it was on land. Like, they're very powerful. They look sharp.
Then what is the beef of the sea?
Oh, if tuna is chicken of the sea, she asks, what is the beef of the sea?
Like, it's got to be big, right?
Way bigger. Yeah. I don't know. What's, like, the biggest thing that we... I mean, tuna's probably the biggest thing we eat out of the sea. Like, the big boys, the big tuna.
The,
like, expensive sushi gets made out of. The mola mola would be the beef of the sea, the largest of all of the bony fish.
Oh, great.
Unfortunately, they are terrible to eat and are mostly made of gelatinous goo that serves to make it so that they hold on to heat well and can dive very deep without exploding.
Well, I guess their purpose in life is not to... make me feel comfortable.
That made me feel
really uncomfortable.
One thing about mola mola is they don't have, like, chill vibes that, like, bring a lot of sort of, like, lower the energy of the room. Where it's like, oh, we can relax
anxiety.
Now. Yeah, it's just like, oh. If there was a mola mola in this room, they're like seven feet tall. They can weigh like 6,000 pounds.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
All right.
Beef of the sea.
Beef of the sea. Watch Madeline's episodes of SciShow at youtube.com/SciShow. They'll be coming out over the next few weeks.